Alrighty, good morning, everybody. It is a beautiful Wednesday morning. The sky is every color. And I didn't take one of my award-winning photographs this morning, but our guest did. He actually went to the balcony outside here and decided he needed to take a picture. Our guest this morning, none other than someone who I've been pleased and privileged to do a lot of shows with over the last couple of years. Someone who's been in broadcasting and media for a long, long time. And is an entrepreneur and an independent thinker all on his own too. He is Canthan Pillay. It's nice to have you here in this environment for a change.
You know, this place is just so incredibly gorgeous. am I allowed to drop F-bombs on the show?
Yeah, of course you can.
This place is fucking gorgeous.
Thanks, man.
And
thanks.
Yeah, that sunrise up there was
nice,
wow.
Huh?
Yeah. Getting to see that every morning, I think, would be
inspiring.
Pretty much, it's a cool
only
way
problem
to wake
is
up.
In winter, you get here and like by 6:30, it isn't even light yet. So that I'm not looking forward to. Nobody does. But you know what? It has its own charms. We've got this freezing cold studio. In winter, it's even colder. It's great. So I see lots going on in the comments already. Bitcoin Boot saying, morning, everybody. Finally, we get to say goodbye to those fucking paper straws. That cuck was horrific and useless. I could not agree more. I am not a fan, never have been a fan. I think I went out one morning with you and I got ordered a orange juice or something, and they brought one of those bloody paper straws. And within, I don't know, 10 minutes of orange juice arriving.
Yeah, the straw kind of just collapses and dissolves.
And then it makes this gross stuff at the bottom.
But you know, there's a South African company that actually came up with kind of biodegradable plastic straws, which I think is great.
That's the way to go.
You consider that we've got people out here.
Sure.
Who say, now hang on a second, there's a global trend. Let's actually go out and do this thing.
Well, I mean, I was talking to someone interestingly enough about this just the other day, and we were talking about how cigarettes, in fact, it was on Monday's show, cigarette butts are now biodegradable. They used to last forever. Remember, you'd see them on the beaches everywhere and all that kind of thing. There are all sorts of things that are now being done that you don't even realize are these incremental improvements that are happening here, there, and everywhere. And then there are those huge and sweeping improvements that are made by executive order from the White House.
Just pro tip, people, the fact that they're biodegradable, these cigarette butts, do not swallow them.
Oh, no. That's not a good idea. All right. So, listen, I know people are going to be interested in us talking a little bit about the South Africa-US situation, the changes that Trump is busy making to the executive branch of government in the US. There's lots of that stuff we've got to get into, but today is by no means going to be all about politics. And when we sat down, Canthan is actually telling me about his story, because we're going to be talking to someone a little bit later on in the window seat about some beautiful places in Mauritius, which is a very, very popular South African tourist destination. As you know, we've discussed it before on the show. And I was saying to him, wow, these are very sexy properties. I mean, there's some four luxury resorts that this hotel group has there. And I said to him, I wonder why the guy who we're going to be talking to this morning is based in Durban. And so Canthan said, oh, no, it's probably because if the flights are canceled, he can always hop in a boat and, you know, swim to Mauritius. It would be about a Robinson Crusoe-ish 100 days, but it can be done.
Yeah, very much so. And depending on the time of the year, I think this time of year, we're not quite at that cyclone period yet.
I don't think you want to be in a canoe, you know? It can be what humans have done over the years. If you think about how, you know, people got onto those little wooden boats and they sailed across vast oceans. I mean, I heard the story the other day for the first time, and this will get us to your story in a second. About these Portuguese explorers, the ones in the late 1400s, like Vasco da Gama and people like that, the most arduous circumstances imaginable, on boats that could fall apart at any moment, often did, sailors that were constantly sick and or mutinying. It's amazing to me that half of the earth was connected up during those years. Probably more than half the earth.
The trick is to actually imagine what the smell would have been like.
Oh, man. Ships. Oh, my God. So you then started telling me about your grandfather, not when we were talking about the smell on the ship, but when we were talking about your family history, because I'm always interested in this stuff. And, you know, even though I've known Canthan for a long time, we've never even had this discussion. And I thought, no, hold. Let's have it on the show. So how your family connected to, I didn't know this.
So Mauritius. Circa 1974, when I was.
74, that's not long ago.
No, wait a second. Circa 1974, when I was at boarding school in India.
Yeah.
And my uncle came visiting to India because he was on a quest to try and find out where our ancestors came from.
Right.
And he eventually ended up in a town almost at the close to the southern tip of India. And the southern tip of India is Cape Comorin, which is very cool because you've got the Bay of Bengal on one side, the Arabian Sea on the other side.
Right. And then
and it's one of the few places in the world where you can see sunrise and sunset over the sea at the same from the same location.
And then if you go due south, you'll hit Sri Lanka.
Yeah, pretty much. And my uncle pitches up, and so he goes on a quest to this village. He knew where his father had come from. And he at that time, he was able to literally go from house to house and say, I am looking for the Velupule household. And eventually, someone points him to a house on a hill, and he goes up over there, and it's the incredibly palatial home, and there's a sweeping driveway, which was large enough to actually accommodate a horse-drawn carriage.
Wow.
You know, because that was the style that the Brits had actually put in place. And he walks into the...
you didn't say evil colonialist Brits.
The evil colonialists.
Yeah, I mean, sorry, do it properly.
I've got to work on this. You know, this deputy white thing is kind of new to me. So he walks into the place, and there's, you know, kind of like a butler type person who says, wait here. And there, hanging in the foyer, is a picture of his father, my grandfather.
You're joking.
Decked out in kind of finery and, dressed like he's some prince in a Bollywood movie.
Unbelievable.
And
that's what people dream they discover, right?
Yeah.
Because everyone dreams that they'll find out that they're related to and descended from this long list of illustrious people who dressed like that and had horse-drawn carriages and a long sweeping driveway. And then, of course, most of us, when we find out, it's like a horrible tumble-down, broken wooden hut.
Well, in this case, it was nothing of the sort because it turned out that so my grandfather was the firstborn son and was the heir apparent to the family estate. And they were basically the richest landowners in this town called Nagercoil. And my grandfather's father had wanted his son to, start taking over the family business, the estate. And my grandfather was having none of it. And, he was...
Was he just a rebel?
Yeah, he was just a rebel. He was in his teens at the time.
I wondered where you got it from. You see, I think there's part of you that's probably bitter and resentful that he didn't stay there and you could have...
No, not at all.
You could have lived there and...
No, absolutely.
It sounds like not a bad place.
No, it doesn't.
You just explained the sunrise and the sunset over the sea.
Well, you have to go slightly further south for that.
Okay, but still.
Yeah, but
doesn't sound like a bad house.
No, it's not like a bad house at all. And then he gets told the story that my grandfather had these constant fights with his father because he refused to take over the family business and wanted to kind of. And eventually he got to the point where he told his father, if you raise the subject one more time, I will head straight out of here. I will walk down to Cape Comorin. I will get onto the first ship that I find, and you will never see me again. And sure enough, 6 months later, his father raised it up again, and my grandfather walked straight out, headed down to Cape Comorin.
And never went back.
Boarded a ship from there to Mauritius. Ended up in Mauritius for a while, where he happened to meet my grandmother's family. And...
Wow.
He decided, I really like this chick. And so he decided that he was going to follow them. They were Mauritian born.
Right. So what do they call those? Did they speak Creole?
I have no idea what they spoke at the time. I assume it was French at the time.
You know, I've met a couple of people who have links and roots in Mauritius. It's a fascinating place, actually.
Yeah.
Because there's such a mix of all kinds of cultures and languages and things there. And obviously now more so than ever, right? Because you've got to become this tourist destination. But I mean, before, because it was never really, it wasn't a big slave place. It was more sort of place that people went to escape that.
Sure.
So they would leave the east coast of Africa. And remember, it was only discovered and mapped by the Europeans, what, in the 1630s, somewhere around there. So they've got an amazing history. And when you land there, the airport is called Sir Siwu Sega Ramgulam Airport. Yes, yes. I mean, Siu that's Sanka a hell Ramgulam, of a name yes, yes. when you see it written on the thing and you're like, what? But yeah, there are lots of people from there that they have, you know, French ancestry and East African and Indian and Malay and all kinds of things.
Yeah, so in the case of my grandfather, he then decided that he wanted to follow this family down to South Africa. So he got himself signed up as an indentured laborer.
Oh, wow. Something most people would
so
want
to do. So
that
he could get free passage to Durban.
Huh.
And he headed down to Durban and proceeded to have 11 kids with my grandmother, of which 8 survived, and my father was the youngest.
Sure.
Yeah, but
what a story.
But from the records that I was able to trace back, he was born around about 1863. And okay. So arrived finally in 1881 in Durban. Roughly.
What a story.
Have
you ever been to the old sort of family in India?
No, I haven't.
Even though you were there in boarding school?
Yeah, I was there in boarding school. But it's kind of off the beaten track, so you have to make a deliberate effort to get down.
And 100 years is a long time, and a lot can happen, right?
Yeah.
Just shows you.
Well, you consider that my youngest daughter was born in 2016, and, you know, he was born. This is like, you know, just these three generations, like spanning.
It's amazing. That's a huge amount of time that's being spanned there.
Three centuries.
So, all right, let's get into some stuff, because obviously all we've heard from our government in the last while is how unfair and unkind and mean Donald Trump is. And then from, you know, the people on Twitter who have lots to say, we don't need America. there are no farm murders. Everybody is overreacting. You get presidential spokespeople saying, we don't need to listen to this U.S. embassy nonsense that they're putting out, the fact sheet that they dropped, because we have the U.N. Office for Human Rights based here, and they're much more important.
And Trump is going to defund them so quickly.
I hope so. I really hope so. And then people say, well, you know, people like you and I are excited about this because we're just horrible people who don't like seeing people getting ARVs, for example, which is a totally unrelated side issue to what USAID does.
But the single thing that we could do right now to fix all of this immediately.
Tell me.
Is to just install a meritocracy. That's all you need to do. You just simply need to say, we are crossing out all of our race-based legislation.
They won't do it. The government won't do it.
No.
Yeah, why won't they do it?
They won't do it because that's the only way that they feed.
They wouldn't be in their jobs. There's not one person in our government, I include all the other parties as well, who seems to be competent.
Look, you and I have been talking for years about the fact that if you want to uplift people in this country, just make poverty the marker. Okay, so you want to give preferential contracts, give it to poor people. And it turns out that the majority of the poor people are going to be black South Africans. But you're not going to have the situation where you're alienating everyone else in the population just simply because of the fact that you're saying you're second-class citizens, which is effectively what it is.
Well, a lot of those people who the government is calling second-class citizens, even if they're not saying it directly, are the ones who are as furious as they have every right to be on social media.
Yeah.
Okay, so some of these people yesterday responded to something I put up. I said, competence really frightens incompetent people, which is true. This is why people are reacting emotionally rather than reacting with a good argument, presenting. And there are plenty of people who are, by the way. I mean, I'm obviously picking on the people who don't come up with good arguments because there are more of them. But the responses all had something to do. They came in two forms. Some of the responses were thoughtful and like, yeah, but how do we get to a point where we have more competent people who can run the economy, right? Which is a good point. We spend more proportionally than any other country in Africa, and we have the lowest levels of literacy and numeracy on the continent, which is a frightening statistic. And if you think about our education department, it has failed comprehensively to give comprehensive education to anybody. But that's one group of the people who are asking, How do we fix this? Good question. Those are the people you want to engage with. That's the whole reason you have social media, I would think. And then there's another group who like throw these bizarre arguments around, like, you're frightened of equality, which is...
Of course I'm frightened of equality. No, but, I don't want all of us to be poor. Come on.
But it's ludicrous to even imagine. I mean, like, what kind of cloud cuckoo land do you have to live in? And I want us to just talk about this for a little bit, because you'll probably be able to explain it much better than me. Certainly, you've explained some stuff to me in the past, and I've gone, oh, okay, yeah, now it makes sense. What is this fantasy, this unicorn rainbow land that has been sold to people where everybody will be the same? And I mean, I said to this one girl who was like, you know, she said something about, oh, you know, you're frightened of equality or something to that effect. And I said, no, there's no such thing as equality. Because, for example, I said to her, you're in the lowest percentile for good looks. Right? So you understand, like, not everybody's equal. I wish I was smarter. I wish I was a little bit taller. I wish I was a ball. I wish I had a girl who looked good. I would call her. Like, all of that kind of shit, right? There's everything, everybody in and you think, you look at somebody who you imagine is very happy and successful, and they always are unhappy about one thing in their lives, maybe more than one thing. So equality.
I don't relate to that at all, Gareth.
Okay, well, whatever. You know. Okay. But equality as an idea is preposterous, because we're all, the whole reason that makes it so the fun to live here is that we're not all clones of each other.
The question that I always ask is, show me where it actually happens.
Doesn't.
Nowhere in the world. But what you can have is a situation where you're raising minimum standards of level across the board. And we already know the easiest way to do that. You unshackle the economy, you remove all of these regulations, mm-hmm. which actually produces a massive uptick in terms of GDP, which then leads to a massive uptick in terms of revenue, which means you've got more money to then plow back into doing all of these crazy social programs that people want to do. The fact of the matter is that if we're an incredibly wealthy country, we can actually afford social grants. But right now we can't. We're borrowing in order to pay these things.
Yeah, I know. I mean, the president's State of the Nation address, which I missed last week, he was boasting about it, not just...
Yeah,
talking about how we're
I watched it
money.
After the fact. And, you know, just a pro tip out here. All of these things, just watch it after the fact and put it on double speed on YouTube. And you can get the gist of it very quickly.
I don't know why anybody bothers with any of that stuff anymore. You can get ChatGPT to summarize the whole thing.
Because you want to watch ugly, fat people parading in Parliament.
And there's a lot of people are fat.
I think we should vote on based on body mass index. What do you think?
So what you should, if you're extremely fat, you get less votes.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you're eating for more people.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, by that standard, you know, Julius Malema would probably be voted in.
Yeah, because he's quite thin at the moment. Yeah. He's having a rough time here. I mean, I know that Elon wants him put on some international terror list, but let's just be a little sympathetic. I mean, the guy just recently, this week, he's lost Mbuyiseni Ndlozi, says he wants to leave politics. He's had enough. He wants to probably go into academia. I don't know, because it's hard to tell what people really want. And then Floyd obviously left a while ago. Dali left. It's pretty much everybody who was in the upper echelons and the superstructure of the EFF has just abandoned him.
But he's still got Karl Niehaus.
He's got Karl Niehaus, but I mean, you know, if that's slim pickings, if ever there was. I feel sorry for him. I'm glad for him that this US thing happened now when it did, because it gave oxygen to him just for a little bit longer. But the guy's looking harassed. I heard stories about how he's checked into an institution to sort himself out a little bit, or that was a while ago. I don't know if it's true. These are things that you hear, you know, Siago Bozza. But
most of his bots still seem to think that he's going to be the next president. So
I would have. I did say that once. And he did have the ability, if he'd managed himself better, to have got to that point where we would have been inevitably faced with a Malema presidency. But he's just got such a combative and angry soul that it just seems like he's his own worst enemy. He self-sabotages.
You know, one of the things that we should realize is that when people want to be left alone, you should normally leave them alone. And a lot of these chains of events that we see right now are based on the fact that people were picked on who should not have been picked on.
Yeah. So
the reason why Trump is president is because Musk got tired of being picked on and decided that he was going to be fighting back.
Well, Trump got tired of being picked on too.
Yeah.
Right. So but, a lot of people, there's the White House Correspondents' Dinner coming up, and they're talking about whether or not Trump's going to be there, and he probably will. I mean, if anything, he's shown that he has a thick skin and he can handle a joke. But a lot of people referred to the fact that when Obama was president, there was that that joke that Obama made about, oh, Donald Trump thinks he's going to be president. And he was in the audience.
Yes.
And then Obama made a couple of jokes about him. And a lot of people think that that was the moment he decided, fuck you, I'm going to do this.
Yes.
Right? And Elon Musk was one of he was the most influential person in the electric car business in America. And they had an electric car meeting at the White House and they didn't invite him on purpose.
Yes.
And at that
even
moment,
even though he produced more electric cars than the rest of the electric car manufacturers in the world put together.
And at that moment, everybody thought that, you know, he's going to just quietly carry on doing this. But he was like, fuck you. I'm coming back at you. So you got to be careful who you piss off, and especially if you piss off people who are truly talented and different and hold a grudge and are a little autistic and a little gifted in business, because they will come after you. For some of them, it's not just ego. It's like, okay, you've given me something to fight against here. Now I have a purpose.
Well, again, in terms of leaving people alone, if people had just left Jacob Zuma alone,
yeah, exactly. Instead of harassing him.
Yeah, he would have just hung out in Kandla, you know, with his tunnels that go to his various wives. And you've seen those reports back there of the architecture.
What's this? What are you talking about?
Yeah, at Nkandla. So, you know, they're separate dwellings for multiple wives.
And there are a couple of them. I mean, it's a compound. It's probably about, what, like 20 different...
Yeah, but there's for security purposes, there's underground access.
Oh, really?
Between these
the trap door opens up. It. But I mean, what happens?
I want to write the movie script for, you know, the life in the Zuma household. But again, they couldn't leave the guy alone. They insisted on putting him in jail on the flimsiest of charges possible. I mean, the guy to jail for contempt of court, and you deliberately give him a sentence that's long enough that he's not allowed to get into parliament.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the first and last time that the Constitutional Court has imposed a sentence.
It's ridiculous, actually. And that proves that our Constitutional Court is a political machine.
Absolutely.
And by the way, he went on to create, almost single-handedly, almost the biggest new party in the country. Overnight,
yes,
virtually, because it was what, 6 months before the election they launched MK, and he even had to discipline. Now, this is the other big story yesterday. I don't know if you saw this, but if anybody was paying attention to South African Twitter, you would have seen Duduzile Zuma and Floyd Shivambu. Wow, big fight going on there. Lots of anger, lots of fuck you. There was like Duduzile went to town, she's like, fuck you, Floyd, and all of this stuff. And I saw it on Monday night. I thought, what the hell's happening here? And then it was all kind of, the fire was put out by who? By Obama.
Uh-huh.
He said, you apologize to Floyd.
And there was a very public apology. Yeah.
But a bit of a step down for her.
Yeah.
But still a very interesting kind of development. I mean, that's a family business, right? MK is a family business.
Well, if it was truly a family business, I think he would have doubled down against Floyd, and he didn't.
Okay, so it's a real party.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
you're a real boy.
I think he certainly understands that the way in which he's going to consolidate his power is precisely by not pandering to his daughter's outbursts.
Okay, yeah. She is out of control.
Yeah. Well,
spoiled.
You've probably heard that saying that, you know, all women are bi. It's a question of whether it's
bipolar or bisexual.
Oh, I'm going to get so much flack for that one. I'm so glad we can tell off-color jokes again.
I know, we're allowed. It feels like things have been opened up, and we're a little more – there's a relief. there's definitely a tangible sense of relief.
You see, so, I was you know, telling jokes with my 8-year-old, soon to be 9-year-old, and inevitably, when you got kids that age, you get to knock knock jokes, and of course, I thought of one which I couldn't really tell her, but you know, I'm going to put it out here, which is knock knock.
Who's that?
Little boy blue.
Little boy blue.
Michael Jackson. Now,
yeah, that's not great now, for an 8-year-old.
Now, yeah, I mean, but
that was his target
okay,
market. But the point is that
and don't get me wrong, because you know the idea that Jackson was in any way a pedophile has been systematically debunked by so what I'm saying is that we still had this ability to be able to tell off-color jokes, even though, you know, the underlying premise was kind of flawed. And suddenly it was, I'm offended by that. And now we're back.
How do we let those offended people, and we've got to be careful not to let this happen again, because, you know, it's amazing how short people's memories are, right? I thought about how we all behaved during COVID, and it's just ridiculous now. If I think back to it, I would be like, they'd have to come and push the mask onto my face and tie it to me and weld it onto my head, because there's no way I'd ever do that shit again. And yet we all did it. And we all fell for this crap of like, I'm offended, and then we need to stop being funny or having a sense of humor in general or being, you know, playful. All of that had to go away because some small group of intransigent people just decided they weren't going to put up with it anymore. And we all went with it. We were like, okay. I mean, I don't know that I ever did. And I kind of carried on breaking the rules and hurting their feelings regardless. But for a little while, I think I was even cowed into submission. And I'm embarrassed about that. I feel like I let myself down by being persuaded by bullshit arguments to do bullshit things.
Well, to a large extent, we were forced into doing particular things because, so for in my case, the reason why I ended up getting vaccinated is because of the fact that I needed to travel.
Same here. And you could the first one. I never got the second.
Yeah, but you could not travel out of the country unless you actually had that.
By the way, have you heard all these people who are offering to get your system cleaned out of those?
Oh, it's a real
spike
thing.
Proteins and things. So, right, so friends of mine have done all kinds of. They've done medicine. What would you even call prescriptions over a period of like 2-3 months to get these things out of their systems? They've been through procedures, not like invasive surgical procedures, but procedures where they do certain things every day to try and get rid of these spike proteins. And I mean, they're taking it very seriously. It made me think maybe I should actually look into it. Well,
the myocarditis is a real thing.
Yeah.
And there are people that I know of personally who have been going through systematic treatment specifically to remove accumulation of fluid around the heart. And yeah, so I was lucky because none of that stuff came in my direction. But it's a real thing. And I've been telling lots of people who've, you know, in the post-vaccination period, if, you know, their energy levels have been down or, you know, they having difficulty in terms of.
And if they go through this protocol, do they improve?
Yes, they do. Yeah. Huh. Yeah. It's a slow and systematic process, but the starting point is, you know, you've got to go for a full body scan. They'll check out whether there has been any of that stuff.
What do you go to the laboratories, you go to the GP?
Basically, it starts with your GP. But yeah, there are lots of doctors that are actually specializing in this stuff right now.
Raven says, I had to be vaccinated or I would have lost my job here in New Zealand. Yeah, you had that terrible bitch, Jacinda Ardern, didn't you? Awful, fucking horse-faced, terrible, terrible woman. And her husband, her stay-at-home husband. Do you remember him?
But if you compare Ardern from the start of COVID to the time that she stepped down from office, she just kind of
it was a
withered.
Real fall from grace.
No, but she withered physically.
Still, I mean, listen, you could actually see how much. There was a picture somebody shared. See if you can find this, James. Picture of Jacinda Ardern before she went into politics. and then what she looked like when she resigned as prime minister eventually.
Yeah, she just became emaciated.
And hideous.
Like from a horror movie. Like,
she's really terrible. But this is apparently, this happens to people. You know, we always used to look at those pictures of like Obama with the full head of hair and no gray. And then we see him at the end and he's like, you know, grayer. Donald Trump is the same. He looks exactly the same as he did 8 years ago. It's incredible.
Uh-huh.
I don't understand it. And obviously, this is a thing that affects only left-wingers. They get considerably worse over time.
I guess it is the case, because you consider this year, by the way, it's going to be 4 years since my 60th birthday, which you were at.
That's right, I was. But you've been gray for a long time.
Yeah,
so it's a sophisticated kind of what do they call it? Where you're
silver fox is what my wife says.
Yeah, but there's a word. It's sort of dignified and mysterious. Have you got that picture? Oh my God, it's a good point about Jacinda. Raven, I'm so embarrassed for you. I mean, I know we've got our own problems with our politicians here, but I'm embarrassed for you that you guys went through that in New Zealand. I don't think in South Africa we ever really took it seriously. Like, you know, certainly in the townships, nobody cared.
Well, the townships never cared.
And didn't give a
shit.
The
townships have always been an entirely different economy.
But even in, I mean, like, I remember someone tried to tell me I couldn't do something in my own house or on my own property, like the homeowners association. I just climbed into them, and they didn't have a good argument against it, so they left me alone.
I got pulled over by a Metro policeman who asked me why I was not wearing a mask in my car. I said, when you sleep alone, do you wear a condom? And he was so pissed off. I cannot tell you.
Yeah, because it was to him, enforce this dumb rule regardless. I mean, I remember those people who were arrested on the beaches. It was crazy.
You know,
long ago. Ooh,
I was on the beach.
Look at that.
Oh, my word. Yeah, look at that.
Terrible. Yeah, but she used to actually, like, that's not even a great picture on the left, but she used to be quite attractive.
Yes.
Like when she was at Varsity or whatever. And I mean, I know that age affects all of us, right? And this is not an age thing.
No, I think it's something that particularly happens with women on the left.
Yeah.
And we saw that pattern in terms of the woman who was prime minister of Finland.
Yes, shame. She also used to be quite attractive. Uh-huh.
And then there's Kaja Kallas, who was the prime minister of Estonia, who's now moved into the EU. I forget what.
Well, have you seen how hideous Greta Thunberg is turning? Also, it's the left. Yeah, it eats your soul.
Yeah, but she was always kind of like.
Jesus, I thought about her the other day. I don't know why. She came up in my thoughts because now she's an adult, right? So you're not beating up on children.
I was thinking.
Do you remember her standing up there and all these people in the world allowing this idiot child who really. You know, she was just like, she had serious problems, whatever it might be. And it wasn't her, you are taking away my childhood. Do you remember saying, how dare you? How dare you? And I thought, who the hell's being persuaded by this shit? But they were.
The interesting thing for me is that they're getting incredibly upset now that Musk has brought on board this incredibly young team.
I know.
For Doge. And the youngest of them is 19 years old. And people are saying, what does a 19-year-old know about fixing the world?
And hang on a second.
Yeah. You were the guys who actually put Saint Greta up on a pedestal.
Right. Here's something interesting. Jacinda just won an award for some documentary about how wonderful she is. I'm moving to the UAE in a couple of months. Good riddance. That's from Raven. Okay, well. Oh, wow. Look. Top left, okay? She looks... She looks sweet.
Yep.
Top right, she's kind of hot. And then it's just like, as soon as the leftism sits in, it just turns you into an absolute harridan. And look at the bottom there. It's like a Lord of the Rings character. And I know she's in New Zealand, so that's not fair to say, but my God, orcs are a real thing, eh?
Reminds me of Yoda. Fear leads to anger.
Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering. All right. So, I mean, are you very vocal and busy on social media? Because I often find myself kind of reposting stuff of yours, but I don't think you're on all the time.
No, I'm there frequently.
What are your rhythms?
I don't actually have any rhythms. It's normally in between doing stuff that. So I'll take a break from coding, for example, and spend probably about a half hour on social media, and then get back into doing other stuff. I'm far more likely to be spending time listening to podcasts, and I've no doubt that you're probably doing.
I do, and this is a good thing. Point, good place rather for us to promote your podcast. So, Canton does a fantastic podcast that I've been listening to. I haven't missed an episode yet. It's called the Overton Pod. And it's available where you get all your good podcasts, and it's worth a listen. You do it with Jonathan Witt,
yeah,
which is great. And you guys talk about all of the international affairs that you never have a chance to discuss anywhere else, and you get quite involved in all of these different things. I remember there was one episode where you were busy talking about politics, and then suddenly the tone changed and it became about cars for about half an hour.
Yeah, we pretty much freestyle it, much like the conversation you and I are having right now, because, you know, entirely unscripted.
You take it anywhere you want to.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing in terms of conversations with Jonathan is that on some topics, we really fundamentally disagree. And that actually makes for a great dynamic because...
I don't understand the people who think that we all need to believe the same things and agree on everything in order to be friends. I can imagine nothing more boring. You and I happen to agree on a lot of things, but if we dig deep enough, we'll find stuff that we disagree on. Mm-hmm. Why is it? And it's kind of a more South African thing than anything else, is that we're incapable of seeing an argument as being a positive thing. I do. I love an argument. You know, it's like that Monty Python sketch, a good argument. Have you come here for an argument? No, I haven't. Yes, you have. I love an argument. It's the most engaging conversation you can have with somebody. So why wouldn't you want to argue occasionally with your friends? And yes, it can get heated and it can get passionate, but that doesn't mean you hate each other.
Well, my closest friend, actually you'll be meeting him next week because we've set up that that breakfast thing, but... That's what we do. He and I
argue
constantly, and it freaks out the rest of my family occasionally because it gets incredibly.
You start shouting, right?
Yeah, it gets incredibly heated. And but the fact of the matter is that, you know, like I said, he's my closest friend, and we really value each other's opinions.
It
makes us smarter people, Gareth.
Well, Rabbit says the Overton Pod is great. It's informative and entertaining. I want Canton and Witt to differ. More views, more insight. Well, that's the point, right? And you sometimes come with a very left field take on what's going on in, you know, the relationship between, say, China and America, or between India and South Africa. I saw Modi was at a conference yesterday with J.D. Vance.
Oh, yeah?
Okay. And they were talking about AI. And you just mentioned coding. Tubble wants to know, what do you code, Canton, in the comments?
Oh, lots of stuff. There are just too many things that I can kind of go into right now.
Because you studied this stuff early on in America.
I didn't study this stuff. That's an interesting thing.
You taught yourself?
Yeah. So I majored in politics. They don't call it political science at Princeton because it's not a science, guys. Can we just be clear about this? No. And so, but one of the things that we needed to do if you were there on a scholarship is that, so that they'll take care of your fees, but you still need to work in order to pay for things. So you need to work in order to pay for food. You need to work in order to pay for your textbooks.
Right.
And I ended up working at the computer center and ended up being good at particular bits of technology at the time. But you and I have spoken about this. So we went through into the Beautiful Mind thing on the profile interview you did with me.
That's right, because you met the guy.
Yeah,
who they based the movie on.
Yes,
the Russell Crowe Beautiful Mind movie. Uh-huh. I remember that
exactly.
So, I think that people are intimidated by this AI stuff, but it doesn't have to be. I was messing around the other night, just getting it to. You know, to draw on my favorite thing that AI can do is to take a huge amount of information and make a very, you know, succinct sort of paragraph or two out of the entire corpus of, say, human history. And you get tremendous insight that way because it has to, and only a machine can do this. The human brain is going to be subjective. It can take, you know, 1,000 years of history and tell you, for example, what the 10 most important advances in human thought might be, or an invention, or in whatever else, the kind of stuff that made Yuval Noah Harari famous, to be fair. He was very good at, he was like a human form of that kind of condensatory AI. And I find that stuff fascinating. I also like when AI is able to generate images for you now. So you can generate, you could take, for example, a face of two different, the faces of two different people, and ask it to amalgamate them into one new person. And depending on which, you know, AI engine you're using, you can actually see some very interesting kind of, you pick out characteristics, or you can make dead people come to life from a...
Well, William Shatner retweeted a picture someone had generated of an AI-produced version of Captain Kirk as a woman.
That kind of thing.
Yeah, and it's just kind of fun to be able to do that. Here's an interesting thing, by the way, that I've been thinking about around exactly the advances that you're talking about, because we're at the point now where you'll be able to give AI a picture and mm-hmm. then get it to fully animate a character. Yeah. And then you can give AI that voice mm-hmm. and it's going to be able to generate the script.
Well, especially for people like us who've done podcasts, because there's so much material for it to work with. It won't get anything wrong.
Yeah. But
it may even make us sound a whole lot better.
Consider,
we make less mistakes. We might even sound smarter.
We might, but I don't think people will actually buy it, because there's too many ums and ahs in what I say, for example. You don't do that because
I do.
You know, you've been doing this as on a professional basis for a hell of a long time. But my point is that if you consider stuff that we were really fond of that then got messed up in reworking, and let's use Star Wars as a very classic example.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I fell out of love with Star Wars completely. I used to be the biggest fan.
But we're almost at the stage now where we'll be able to script our own Star Wars universe stories mm-hmm. using AI.
And it can be. Have you seen these guys who do make their own video?
Yeah.
I mean, there's one dude who, using primarily, obviously he's got an incredible graphics engine in his machine, but he used bits and pieces of actual stuff from the movies, but very little of that. Most of it was generated by him. And I'll tell you what, it's better than anything that they had in the actual movies. And it took him months, but he's such a fan. And it's way better. The story's better. It's short. It's only about a 15-minute thing. But it's interesting that there was a piece that I posted, I think it was on Instagram and on Twitter the other day, about how the whole zeitgeist has changed now. And there's this feeling of, like, it's almost a revival of that 80s energy.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I've been feeling that.
So you can even see it in movies and TV series. I've been watching this series. I don't want to bore the audience with this again, but I watched, someone here in the office said to me, you have to watch Paradise, which is this show. I'm four episodes deep now. It's about these, it's essentially an American political drama, but with, you know, CSI parts to it and those big reveals, aka, you know, Lost and The Dome and that sort of stuff. So it's a big thriller, and there's so many moving parts to it, but all of the music is from the 80s. And I thought, this is, again, building this idea that this guy, I should have given you the clip, James, but essentially this guy argues that we're now entering a place where celebrities don't matter, where governments are discredited, where people just don't believe anything that they're spoon-fed. The education system's let us down. People are rebelling. They like the rebels. They like the rule breakers. They're not interested in complying and following. I wonder if the people who put us through what we went through in the early 2020s, I wonder if they could have looked forward and seen what it's resulted in for them. A total discrediting of all the systems that they'd spent decades building. I wonder if they would have maybe changed tack. I think they would have.
I think that the sheer hubris just kind of completely overtook them, and they really thought that they were invincible. And the worst possible thing that they could have done and it turned out to be the best for the rest of the world, was to steal the election in 2020 from Trump. And if they had just let him have his second term,
it would have gone away.
He would have continued on the same tack. You know, he never would have discovered the stuff that was going on in terms of all of these programs that have been funding these nefarious things around various parts of the world. He would have finished his presidential term, and we would now be probably looking at, well, Vance would never have been.
No.
Would have been President Mike Pence at this point.
Or it would have gone back to the Dems.
You know, yeah,
because they wouldn't have gone so batshit crazy. Yeah. Look, and that would – why do people want to know – and I hate having to refer again and again to obvious things, but let's just get this out of the way. Why are people like you and I so interested in what goes on in America? And I mean, I just brought up this J.D. Vance Modi thing that was at a conference that was held in France. And it was about technology and about AI and how it's going to affect in principle government, but everything else as well. Now, if I weren't paying attention to J.D. Vance, I wouldn't have known about this conference, because God alone knows I don't follow what Macron is up to. Who would? Some people like Candace Owens are more interested in whether his wife is a man or not. But why do we care about America, Canton? Why do we end up talking about this all the time? It's not because we're bored.
So economics 101, you know, my macroeconomics professor back in the day, you know, introduced me to that saying that when America sneezes, the rest of the world catches a cold.
Yeah.
And that's exactly the reason why, because you literally have the largest economy on the planet that controls the global financial system and literally has the ability to cut people off completely from any role that they can play in the world. And so you actually recognize this is an imperial power that actually affects all of us on a day-to-day basis.
Do you think that this is the most power that a president has exercised? I mean, I think he's 18 days in at this point. That any president has exercised in history?
I think he's certainly pushing the boundaries in terms of what's possible. The interesting thing in terms of the American context is that you still have those checks and balances in place.
Sure.
So, yeah, you can put in place an executive order that says,
paper straws, for example.
Yeah, you remember that that story from his first terms and there was Trump saying, I'm going to kill 600 million Muslims and one blonde. Why do you want to kill one blonde? And he says, see, no one cares about the 600 million Muslims.
Did he actually say that?
No, it was a joke at the time, Garrett. We're going to get fact-checked.
No, but you know what's going to happen. Yeah. Someone's going to say, you see, he is a Nazi. I told you he's a Nazi.
Yeah, but...
Hey, window seat, guys.
Yeah, but remember that what we're going to be able to do is, if you don't like something that Trump is doing, Congress can actually turn around and say, actually, we're passing a law.
And the courts, which are, there are a bunch of left-wing politically motivated judges that are taking him on an individual executive orders. But there is a check and a balance. It's not a dictatorship.
Yes.
And let's see what happens.
As opposed to, you know, Xi Jinping pretty much has the ability to do whatever he wants.
I just think it's so great that there are those four, like, turbo nerds who were in the basement of the Treasury building.
Yes.
Who just got access to the entire system. I drove past the USAID offices in Pretoria yesterday. Shut down.
Cool.
Bolted.
Uh-huh.
There's no one there. Not a car in the parking lot.
And I wonder how many of our media outlets out here were recipients of that largesse. I can't wait
now
for
that's
that,
an interesting
that data idea. To come
I
out.
I think that'll be fascinating.
I think we're going to find that, you know, certainly in terms of the health sector in our country, just the NGO sector as a whole, you know, are we suddenly going to have the scenario where we're not going to have these NGOs now launching court cases to prevent us evicting people from abandoned buildings?
Yeah, I think that's going to
I
happen.
Mean, the guys who've been funding the legal defense for the Zamazamas.
They're not going to get their free government money from U.S. taxpayers anymore. All right, let's talk to Ramesh Jinarain, who is the Chief Sales and Marketing Officer for Sun Life Hotel Management. We actually gave you a little intro, Ramesh, before you even came on the show, because I was looking at the portfolio for Sun Life. Over 13 years of experience in the hospitality and travel industry. This is you now, obviously. Today, in addition to managing World Leisure Holidays remotely, he oversees global sales, the central reservation office, and marketing, as well as digital marketing in Sun Life, driving strategic growth and innovation. I've actually been to one of your hotels. I was telling Canton, I've been to La Pirogue.
Oh, great. Morning, Gareth. Morning. And morning, Camden.
Nice to see you.
La Pirogue is an iconic property. I'm glad that you've seen the icon of Mauritius. It's one of the pioneering hotels there. We've got four of them on the island under the Sun Life umbrella. Sun Life, because the hotels are on the two coastline, the Sunrise and Sunset Coast. And, you know, magnificent properties, 2 5-star and 2 4-star properties.
Well, I mean, we had a lot of conversations about sunrises this morning already. This is an interesting thing. I don't know if many people in South Africa are familiar with Sun Life as a hotel group. So just tell me what the origins are and how long you guys have been going and all the rest of it.
I think the origins, if you go back in the day, stems from Southern Sun, Sun International days, okay. Saul Kirzner. Those are the brands. Then the unbundling happened in the late 90s, where it split off into Sun International and Sun Resorts at the time. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, tracking down the line, we 2 years ago, rebranded it Sun Life. And reason is we kept the heritage of Sun Resorts in the form of Sun, the energy, and infused it with life. Life being beautiful experiences that we've introduced for guests in our hotels, you know, because like I always say, we don't sell to clients a 7-night hotel room. We sell them a 7-night experience that's supposed to end off with a halo effect that carries it through, you know, years, and conversations around dinner table stems around these experiences, not necessarily just a hotel room, a swimming pool or restaurant.
Yeah, but I mean, listen, Mauritius is so beautiful and people love going to these tropical islands because it's unlike anything else. And South Africans, we've had this discussion on this show in this feature before about how popular it is as a tourist destination for South Africans. So obviously you guys have got lots of bookings from here. Do you get primarily your clients from South Africa, or are there other places that compete with us for bookings?
Look, the major markets are still remain Europe, UK, France, Germany. Those are the primary markets. But South Africa, from a proximity perspective, you know, with 3.5-4-hour flight, sure, sees quite a lot. It features as third or fourth on the list of arrivals into Mauritius. So very popular destination for South Africans, definitely. Obviously, the ease of travel, the air access, visa-free.
What's the how long's the flight?
It depends. You know, if you are flying into Mauritius, it's 3.5 hours with a tailwind, and then back to South Africa is 4 hours. So give or take.
Still, it's not bad. I mean, that's quick for a tropical island. Now, what are the things that people want when they go on a holiday like this, a getaway like this? They want, some of them want golf. I can't imagine why you'd want to play a game like that in the humidity when you could be on the beach and in the water. But, you know, I'm not a golfer. So people like golf. What else do they like? They like the restaurants. They like the spas. Are those the big ticket items?
Yeah, they are generally, you know, if I could call it your standard norm ticket items. But then they also look at the island for cultural immersion. Remember, the island is a volcanic island. There's no indigenous people per se. It's got an influence of Chinese, Indian, African that brings out flavors, different cultural experiences. So different, you know, festivals that we celebrate on the island, which are great. And that's the, if I could call it, culture seekers look for that element in it. And then there is obviously the hustle and bustle of the local life in the form of visiting the markets that we've seen very popular. And then the wild south of the island, which, you know, you've got the contrast of the turquoise waters that ladens the island with the waterfalls and the greenery of the south. So that's often what clients look for, in addition to obviously what the resorts have to offer.
Well, I'm not going to by any means impress you that I'm some sort of cultural junkie, but I did go to the Pamplemousse
Botanical Garden,
right, which is pretty impressive. Yeah. I mentioned to Canton, whose grandmother is from Mauritius.
Indeed.
Yeah, that we, when you land there, you go to Sir Siwusegu Ramgulam Airport.
Siwusanka Ramgulam.
the person that gained Mauritius its independence.
That's right.
Interestingly enough, his son has recently become the taken over the new government. You know,
oh, wow. Had a landslide dynastic victory. Politics, so, yeah, unbelievable.
So,
how often do you go there?
So I am based in Mauritius. Post-COVID, I've based myself there managing World Leisure remotely in South Africa. But I've been brought up in South Africa. You know, I lived my life here, 32 years. Born in Mauritius, but spent 32 years in Johannesburg and relocated with my family just post-COVID.
Nice. Okay, that's very good. Tell us what your favorite thing is about Mauritius.
Mauritius, I think it gives me, a blend of from culinary experience. I enjoy food, so I'm a foodie. I love that. So Mauritius offers that flavor in it. I enjoy hiking mountains as well, hiking mountains and trails. And there's beautiful mountains to hike, different intensity levels, if I could call it. So I'm enjoying that at the moment. And obviously the sea. No one can escape from that.
Oh, it's beautiful. And what's your favorite place in Mauritius? And you don't have to just include your four hotels, but you probably will.
It depends. You know, it depends with the crowd I'm with. If I've got friends that are looking for a beautiful sunset with great cocktails, I always enjoy lounging at the Buddha Bar Beach at Sugar Beach, you know, enjoying the cocktails and the Asian fusion cuisine that it offers. If I've got my little one who doesn't sleep, you know, he gets up early in the morning, then I tend to head to the East Coast and look at the magical sunrise, out of the Indian Ocean. That's always his enjoyment, so I enjoy that with him. And then the north of the island's got a public beach called Peribere, which is literally a swimming pool in the sea, so I enjoy that as well. So it depends on, what I'm in for, what mood I'm in on that particular day.
What is your favorite cocktail, by the way?
There's a signature cocktail made at Sugar Beach. So it's one that I've not seen anywhere else. It's literally a dome that's, a smoke dome that's created. And it's called Make a Wish. So the aim of it is to pop it with your nose and make your wish. And I enjoy that. It's always Instagrammable, photogenic type of cocktail. But tastes great as well.
People love that. Okay, so what's the best time of year to go, or is all year good? Because we've been over this a couple of times on the show. I still don't have an definitive answer on like what the best time is to go to Mauritius.
So for me, when I look at the island, you know, you split it into obviously quarters, first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, and fourth quarter of the year in terms of months. But it's literally got only two seasons, a long summer. So it's got a 10-month summer and a mild winter. So it depends. You know, my favorite time stems from around October to April in the year, and avoiding the slightly cooler month, because obviously I've become an island boy. So, I've become a bit sensitive to temperature changes. Let's put it that way. But I enjoy that element. But when I was in South Africa or living in the UK, I enjoyed it all year round. I was swimming in July in the middle of winter. It was fine. The temperature was a mild 22, 23 degrees. So it was good.
It's lovely. It's just never horrible there.
Yeah.
How much? Because you live there, I can ask you, like, how much traffic is there between Mauritius and Reunion?
There's quite a few. I think I was in Reunion last week with the family, and if I look at the flight schedule, there's literally about 5 flights a day between Mauritius to Reunion on a mixture of Air Mauritius and Air Austral. And remember, it's only a 30-minute flight. Often you sit longer in immigration than the flight itself.
That's amazing, because they're fairly close together, right? But the one is completely different to the other.
Yeah, no, Reunion is a volcanic island, you know, very adventure-driven. So it's not, you know, if you look at Mauritius, as soon as you talk to someone and you just say Mauritius as a brand, it conjures up images of turquoise water, lagoons, filawood trees, palm trees, and relaxation comes to mind. When you look at Reunion, it gives you the contrast. It's more adventure, trails, mountains. It's kind of, the terrain's very mountainous. It's great to do a helicopter flip in Reunion. That's what we did last week with my family. And the volcano is a different site. You know, it's completely different.
So Shea Rubin is a must when you go to Mauritius, says Janine. And Raven says Le Morne is great surf. If you want to go surfing.
Le Morne has the winds of the south, so it's great for surfing and kite surfing, rather.
Yeah.
That's the famous spot on Le Morne side. And then Sheerhoeven, yeah, there's a number of iconic restaurants, you know, in Mauritius, depending on what you fancy, what you favor, it's there. At Sugar Beach, for example, Mare Mare has been a new pop-up concept that's been introduced, and it's by Chef Ruben Ruffel, who's introduced it in December. And he's you know, curated his own menu, which is going to change every season, with local produce. And then he's brought the wines from South Africa, which always goes great with any local cuisine that you put on.
I love it. Okay, well, listen, I'm very glad that we got to speak to you this morning. Just in case anybody wants to know, those four properties are Sugar Beach, Long Beach, La Pirogue, and Ombre. And you can find out more. That they've got a site. You can see yoursunlife.com for more info. Yeah. And I appreciate your time this morning. It's great to talk to you and meet you.
Likewise, Gareth. And just in closing, those four properties are sold through World Leisure Holidays. So anyone that walks into a travel agent can ask for those products, and it will be bought through World Leisure, who is our in-house tour operator in South Africa.
Excellent.
Owned by Sunlife. Yep.
There we go. So that is Ramesh, and it's very good to speak to you this morning, Ramesh. Appreciate your time.
Thanks. Thanks, Gareth. Have a good one.
Good stuff. We thought he was in Durban, but he's actually in Mauritius.
They look the same, don't they? Nice.
Yep. Yeah, it's very, very good. By the way, if you want to find out more, go to travel.co.za to make your dream holiday a reality. It's 7 o'clock. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Canton's here, and we've got Grammy Award-winning Votep Kellerman, who's just won another set of Grammys. I say set because this is his third at the 67th Annual Grammy Awards. He's got a new album out. He also did some collaborations with Zex Bantwini, which deserves some honorable mentions. And just to make things a little bit more interesting, he's also done some interesting stuff in university, which you're not going to expect to hear from someone who is a world-renowned flautist and Grammy Award winner.
Is he going to give us a live performance?
I don't know about that. We'll have to see. But he's definitely bringing the Grammys. Cool. So you'll get to see those. Stick around.